At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick to 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Fantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
Hello and welcome to On the Farm Pitcher List podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. I'm your host, Lamar Gibson.
And I'm your host, Jake Maish.
And as playoffs are coming close for many fantasy leagues, rookie leagues and DSL pretty much are done. They're in their own playoff modes as by the time you guys are hearing this. But the teams that haven't made it to their championship games are done for the season. So it seems like a good time to look at some lower minors guys that may have been overlooked with all the accelerated movement that we've seen. You may have missed out on some low A and even high A guys that are, you know, bringing some potential value. So today we'll be focusing on hitters and pitchers who are below the double A level currently that we feel have some dynasty value and may not have gotten much national spotlight this season. Before getting into that, of course, we want to talk this week in baseball, which is pretty abbreviated. The big thing is Kyle Harrison's debut. We talked about it on last episode, in preparation of, and now it is in the past tense. Jake, I know we actually were supposed to talk through Kyle Harrison and I completely blew past giving you time to talk about Kyle. So now after the start, I will open up the floor, let you say your piece about Kyle Harrison.
Yeah. So I was keeping tabs on him pretty much throughout the season, and it was like really, really bad for a while with the command. I mean, he was carrying like a walk rate north of 20% for like a long time. And he just wasn't able to go deep in games. He has to, never once in the minors did he face more than 18 hitter or 19 hitters in a start. And the longest he went was 5 innings, and that only happened once. So he was just like huge pitch counts, wasn't going deep, ton of walks. But the strikeout numbers were always still good. Like, he's always been a good, you know, swing and miss guy. The stuff's never been in question. It's just like the command really hurt him. And he actually went and kind of took a break in early July. His last start in July was on July 4th. And then he went down to the complex league, just like worked with the coaching staff and just tried to, like, I think, reset a bit. And because like he would have a one start where he had one walk or no walks, and then he would go back to having 3, 4, 5. And then a couple, like a month after that, he'd have a start where it looked better, and then he kept regressing. Right. So I think he went down, worked on it a lot. And then he came back up. His first start in AAA again was on August 5th. So a full month of just kind of like working on it. And the first start, he had 4 walks in 2 innings. And it was like, oh man, what was he doing? But then he went in his next 2 starts, 7.1 innings combined, no walks, 11 strikeouts. And I think that was enough, I think, for the Giants to see like a consistent lack of walks across 2 starts. Again, there were still short starts, 3.1 innings with 12 batters faced, and then 4 with 18. And, you know, he showed out in his MLB debut. You know, he still has the stuff that's always gotten him the strikeout rates. And he actually, how many walks did he have? Lamar, do you know off the top of your head? 1. Okay, 1 walk.
I was going to say, I'm trying to pull it up right now.
No, no problem. So he had 1 walk in his MLB debut, 5 strikeouts. And I know, Lamar, you actually watched it, so I'll let you do your breakdown of what you saw, because I wasn't available to catch that one. But, you know, it's like he was always young for AAA, and he was always pitching in the PCL. So I think that those are two things that were like, you know, a bit against him. You know, it's not common to have a 21-year-old pitcher in AAA. And then also just the PCL is rough. And so, yeah, I mean, like, he's still the pitcher that I think has been hyped for a while. The stuff has always been there, but just kind of been the command. And he might, like, something in his last, something that he worked on, you know, down the complex level, and something that he's been able to do recently has really, really turned the corner. Like, specifically with his zone rate was 45%, which is like right about league average. And then his chase rate on outs pitches outside the zone was 33%, which is a bit over league average. So if he's going to stay around the zone enough, especially with the fastball, and get chases outside the zone on his breakers, like, you know, he doesn't have an impeccable command if he has that, you know, nasty slurve coming from the left side. I think that he's still kind of like still working even now to kind of like figure out who he is as a pitcher. You know, he threw 72% fastballs in his debut. And I know Lamar will talk about that a little bit more too, but you know, I think it's great to see that he made it to the majors. I think I definitely thought that it was going to happen maybe in like May or June. But those command issues really, really set him back. But honestly, really impressive for him to go and work on it and then get back on track and make his MLB debut this year. And it looked good.
Yeah, I think, you know, talking about watching the start, I didn't watch it live. I went back and was able to use some technology to watch the start kind of in an abbreviated sense. So watching just his pitches. And actually, I have the play log pulled up on Fangraphs as well, just to kind of help refresh my memory as well. I think there was a handful of things that I noticed. We were talking off mic about his fastball, which has never really been an elite level fastball. Major league capable, sure, but definitely that's not his put away pitch at all. That's not really his calling card. And even in the start against the Phillies, it was sitting around 94, topped out around 96, 97. Nothing as far as his extension, release point, shape of the fastball at all shows, again, like anything significant. But Jake, you were pointing out that fastball got 11 whiffs. What I saw was that he was doing a pretty good job commanding that fastball at the top of the zone. And I think that helped kind of set up the rest of what he was trying to do pitch wise, which is really relying on that put away pitch, which is the sort of it was being called a slurve through the broadcast, slider, curve. You know, I guess that really depends on how you look at the breakdown of movement there. But that's really the put away pitch for him. And what I thought was really fascinating was he really commanded the fastball top of the zone and on the right hand side of the plate. So against lefties, that obviously helps. He was busting in the right hand hitters. He actually ended up hitting Edmundo Sosa. So kind of going a little bit too far in. And he actually did much better against the Phil's right hand hitters than he did against the lefties, which is, you know, somewhat surprising, having a reverse split like that. Obviously, it's one game. Doesn't mean that that's what he's going to be for the rest of his career. But I just thought that that was somewhat notable. In fact, I'm looking at the game log now, and all of his strikeouts, he got 5 strikeouts. They were all against righties. He struck out Trey Turner, Castellanos, Baum, Realmuto, and Johan Rojas. So literally all of the righties, not all the righties, but literally the right-hand hitters only, he's getting strikeouts against. The lefties gives up a double to start against Schwarber. Obviously, Bryce Harper takes him deep. Bryson Stott hits a double. Where else am I? Harper gets another hit. And then Stott finishes them off a single to center, and that was the end of his night. So not so good against the lefties, really good against the righties. He had an at-bat against Realmuto where he got Realmuto striking out, and he dropped a really nasty, again, what was being pegged as a slurve within that at-bat that was just like exactly what you want to see from a lefty that can throw that, as far as down in the zone gets the very bottom of the zone, perfect movement. Realmuto was just couldn't even swing at it, just was a statue. And so there's something there. I think Jake, last week, again off mic as we were talking about Harrison, you mentioned that you thought there may have been a little bit of an overreaction to Harrison's walk numbers and that command question, where you thought,
myself included, I was very like, oh my God, the world is ending.
Right. So I think you were bringing up that, and I think we're kind of seeing it now, at least with this first start, that from a dynasty standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint, there's still good value with Harrison as a starter. Another thing that I am assuming here, based on just watching start, is and extrapolating it over many, if not all, of the other rookie pitching starts that we've seen and pitching debuts that we've seen this year, is there really seems to be a pared down, simplified sort of throw your best pitch as much as possible. I know when Bryce Miller came up, a lot was made in his first handful of starts, like, oh, he's just spamming the fastball, that's not going to last. Mason Miller's another one. Gavin Williams is another one. Bobby Miller, seems like all the Millers apparently, but like a lot of these guys, when they came up, it was like, throw your best pitch. A lot of them, it's the fastball. And the teams were kind of like, we'll just kind of build off of that instead of trying to bring you up and have you do a lot of mixing matching early on. I think this is speculation, but I think it's a lot of, let's build the confidence, right? Let's show at the major league level, you can throw your best pitch and get outs, get strikeouts, get swings and misses. And then that third pitch, you know, that changeup or that slider that we're still kind of working on, trying to get you to get it in the zone completely, like those sorts of things will continue to work in. We know we have to build them into the game plan, because we know hitters, major league hitters, are going to adjust. But that's not the top priority, it doesn't seem, especially with this class of pitchers. And I think Harrison falls into this similar boat. So I'll be curious to see in his next start if we see any sort of similar trends as far as his pitch mix, usage, and then the effectiveness versus lefties versus righties, if that's a trend that we see as well. I saw a lot of comparisons, and this is where I fall in, a lot of comparisons to D.L. Hall, right? Lefty, he has swing and miss stuff, but there's a big command issue. Maybe he's actually better off coming out of the pen. I think the difference overall is, or the difference so far, let me put it that way, because they're still both quite young and early in their career, is I think Harrison's overall youth, even though I think age-wise they're maybe a year difference between them, but I think just the number of innings that Harrison has logged versus Hall gives me some hope that there's still like an extra piece there, and now he's at the major league level. I think Hall, this is kind of who he is, and we haven't seen much from him because A, the Orioles are in a playoff hunt and they don't have time to kind of, they got a lot of young, a lot of youth on their team already. They don't really have the luxury of adding more youth while they're trying to hunt for, you know, winning a division, maybe a number one overall seed, et cetera, et cetera. Even though, you know, they can always use the pitching help. I think with Hall, there's going to be a decision of how confident are we to keep him in the rotation? I don't think Harrison's at that point yet. I think Harrison still has a little bit more leeway before the Giants are at that point. So I say all that to say, and I think Jake kind of speaking on your behalf, if you roster Harrison, you should feel good about this first start. If you don't roster Harrison, I think you should feel good about this first start. And you may want to start sending some inquiries. Your deadline might be passed. But if you're able to work out all season trades, et cetera, like you might want to circle Kyle Harrison and say, hey, you know, I'm kind of rooting for him to do good, but not great. And maybe I can slip something kind of past the goalie a little bit. Like I can go out and make an offer in the offseason and get him. And then that second season, that first full season as a major leaguer, he'll be able to flourish because I see all the bits and pieces. I see where they need to come together. It's just a matter of getting that timing. So Harrison is still, I think, valuable. Is he a top 100 guy like he had been to start the season? Maybe not, especially with this particular draft class, moving a lot of guys, a lot of those fringe guys out. I could see him falling out of top 100, but, you know, he's even if he's not prospect gold anymore, he is a major league pitcher now. And that's the most important thing. He is now at the highest level, which is how you win your fantasy league. Nobody wins by having the best AAA pitcher, right? Like you need guys to rack up stats at the major league level. And that's what he's doing now. So I'm very interested now to see his second, third, and subsequent starts to finish out this season.
Yeah. Honestly, interesting to hear that he might be outside the top 100, because I mean, for the longest time he was top 20, you know? And I honestly haven't been paying attention to where he's ranked on like updates for some of the common like sites.
Yeah, same here. That's kind of my general. That's my general, again, speculation. I haven't.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not citing a particular list. I'm just thinking about like, I know he has fallen. I know that for a fact that he has fallen through this season and most of the major lists to right. At least the bottom half of that. Of that top 100, right? That second 50. And then, like I said, just thinking about what this draft class specifically is doing. And then, of course, you have, you know, a handful of guys still graduating. But think about this draft class, like you got four, five, you know, the top five guys are going to be somewhere in the mix. And then you probably got a handful of others. You know, that's some of the guys we're going to actually talk about in today's pod. But, you know, the Matt Shaws, how people feel about Nolan Chanuel, like all those sorts of guys will mix in that lower half, too. So it's just you got to make space. And I think Harrison, right. Harrison seems like the type of prospect, knowing how most of these major prospect lists go, major rankings go. He seems like the type of prospect that guys go, yeah, you're done here. You know, you're already at the major league level. There's really nothing more that we can say or do as a prospect to like move you up. We need to make space for these new guys. And that's kind of how prospect rankings tend to go. Like, regardless of the methodology for the individual writer, evaluator, or team, it tends to pretty much go like, once you make to the major league level, even if you haven't graduated, I mean, there's really nothing, nobody's going to jump from being even number 20 on somebody's list, make their major league debut, and then now all of a sudden we need to make them within the top 10. Like, that doesn't really help anybody. They're already at the major league level. Why would you jump them 10 spots over guys that are still trying to make it there? It's, you know, you're pretty much on your right way. So whatever your last sort of spot was before you made it to the majors, that's pretty much where you are. And it, worst case scenario, you're going to drop from there. That's what I've seen in the last couple of years with most major prospect lists. That's kind of what the end result tends to be, which, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just, that's what's informing my opinion about him no longer being a top 100 guy.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair. I definitely see the methodology there. It's just, yeah, it's wild thinking about kind of like where he was. It's like he, for some people, he was like the number one pitching prospect for a minute there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely like the number one lefty, right?
Right. Even absolutely. If
he was the number one overall, you're definitely the number one left-handed pitcher for quite some time. So yeah.
Yeah.
But those are the guys that I like to circle because you can get that value, right? When people get the prospect fatigue of like, because that was the other thing with Harrison. Like, when is he going to finally make his debut? When is he going to finally come up? Mm-hmm. We've been hearing about this guy forever. And then, you know, everybody starts to, you know, look at the shiny new toys and start to gravitate elsewhere. And then if the results don't come in, it's like, okay, well, maybe we're wrong about this guy. And yeah, there's a line where you're like, oh no, this guy is like really bad. Like, this is guy, he may not make it, but like you were saying with Harrison, it was always just, it was a lack of consistency, right? It was, the stuff is there. He can get the results. It's just, he can't get it start over start, month over month. Well, there's still something there for me. There's major league pitchers that have that problem, you know, to the major league players that have this problem. Like, streaks come, some players are streaky, right? Streaks come and go. If the stuff and the talent is still there, and then the team believes in them to get, give them that final call, hey, I'm interested, right? And if I can pick him up for cheap or for free, absolutely. Like, welcome aboard. We'll see how this plays out, and then I'll make my decisions from there. So, you know, deep dynasty, you're not grabbing them unless you're giving up quite a bit. But redraft leagues, you know, start thinking about Harrison in the back end of your draft as you're going into, you know, next year's redraft, of being like, hey, you know, who's an extra arm that I can add that will be at the major league level, so I'm not wasting a draft spot waiting, you know, playing the up and down game. Like, I don't see Harrison like getting pushed back down. I think now that he's up, he's up. So, you know, he's on the major league rotation. I can get him for, you know, pretty cheap on the back end, and he'll add some value if you're in the shallower leagues, where there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of talent that's on the wire, but you know, you're really looking at those top 150 sort of prospects. He's still in that mix. I think you can, you know, make an aggressive offer unless, like I said, unless the wheels completely fall apart where he shows us like, oh no, there is something actually like underlying wrong here. Or he completely like blows it out the water for the rest of this year, in which case, like, obviously price of business is going to go way up because he already has the pedigree to go with it. So I think, like I said, if you don't have him, you're kind of rooting for him to make more starts like he did. Good, not great. And then maybe I can slip something through.
Yeah. No, and if he somehow is, you know, demoted or taken out of the rotation, it will not be for lack of opportunity, because right now he is one of three in the rotation.
Right.
And they got Alex Wood in long relief, so I'm sure he's going to get some bulk innings, but – and even Sean Manaea maybe, but like dependable guys, they don't have a lot.
That's what I say. Free Ryan Walker.
Okay.
Ryan Walker.
I don't know much about Ryan Walker. I'll have to look.
Well, Ryan Walker is like their go-to opener. He's a rookie as well. He's a rookie as well. And I believe almost all of his appearances, except his last one, he got his first save pitching to one batter. He went 1/3 inning and got his first major league save. But he's been an opener pretty much all of his appearances this year. typically paired with like a Manai or somebody like that. But he's super effective, right? He'll go an inning in a couple, you know, inning in a third or so. No runs, maybe a hit, no walks, 2 to 4 strikeouts. And I'm just like, let the guy give the guy some room. Either put him in high leverage and have him coming out, you know, eighth, ninth inning. And I know with the Giants, the way they're playing, it's not like they got a whole lot of high leverage games right now, but like put him in that way, or just let him like play out the string. But that's just, yeah. That's my look.
Okay.
Free Ryan Walker.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now I'll have to check out a game when he does an opener. I don't know.
When he opens.
Yeah. When he opens. Oh God. Yeah. That's how you say that. Oh man. But, one last point about Kyle Harrison. I pulled out the trusty calculator and, figured out that he had a 21.5% swing strike rate in his MLB debut. I've never seen a number higher than that in an MLB debut. That's insane. And yeah, I think he's going to have the opportunity. They don't have a ton of depth in the rotation right now. There might be a guy or two that can come up from AAA, but like, I think that he'll have some run. And like you said, in redraft too, like I think he's absolutely viable for next year. And could be a good late round pick.
Before we head into break, the second bit, like I said, this week in baseball is pretty abbreviated. So the second bit that we have is just more of a quick note, and that's Adiel Amador getting promoted to Double A. Amador has actually been hurt recently. He was just finishing up some rehab assignments in the Complex League. And then they moved him from there to Double A, which is kind of his more standard or normal trajectory based on what he had been doing previously before getting injured. So it's good to see him moved along. There's been a lot of debate I've been seeing, obviously, about Rockies players and prospects, you know, pitching prospects. We know kind of the baggage that comes with that, but I've been seeing a lot of people that are like, hey, you know, the best bet is kind of like so high with Rockies prospects. I don't know. There's not enough about the team to make me think that they've completely done a 180 philosophically and like they've really figured something out now, at least when it comes to hitters. But when I look, one thing that I have noticed is like all of their top players now, or their top prospects, their top three guys, right? If like Tovar's graduated, Yankeel Fernandez, Amador, Dion Jorge, like those sorts of guys, the major difference that I see from previous you know, outputs from the Rockies farm system is that these guys are super young. And previously the biggest breaking point with hitting prospects from Colorado was that they never called these guys up, right? It was like Sam Hilliard was like 26 before they ever gave him a shot, and like by that time it was like anything that you could have worked on with him, he's just cemented as this like fourth outfielder type, you know, boom or bust. Like there's nothing else that you could do. Hunter Goodman is another one that kind of seems more in the former way, right? He's in AAA right now, but he's aging without really getting any majorly signed. Brenton Doyle is kind of more in that bucket. They finally gave him, he was 24. They finally kind of gave him a break. They went and got Nolan Jones. So I don't really count Nolan Jones because he's really Cleveland's prospect. They just went and traded for him. So The thing that I'm seeing now as they're moving young guys and giving young guys the shot, you know, Tovar took a while, but he's looking a lot better. Right. But a lot of that is learning on the job. Right. What you expect for a 21-year-old to, you know, learn on the job as an everyday major leaguer. So it's taking him some time, but he's starting to round the form. Yankee Fernandez got the Double A. Now he's starting to hit some roadblocks, right, with his swing and miss, which has always been in his game. But he's 20 years old. He still is hitting for power. So I would love to see a second year of him at, you know, Double A as a 21-year-old. What does that look like? Jorge, same thing. Amador, same thing. Amador is like 2021 as well. So I'm on the fence. I'm not fully bought in like I said, that there's a regime change or philosophical change, but I'm also not going to pile on the never Rockies. We're not, you know, right. I just pump and dump them or whatever. Like, because I think there's at least a couple of pieces there. Again, hitters, not talking about pitchers, but yeah. Hitters. I think there's a couple of pieces there where at least I'm still intrigued. I still want to see another season or so to see what happens with them. And Amador, Fernandez, Jorge, those three especially lead that pack. Pitching wise, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know if I said this on the pod. I think I told you this off mic, Jake, but when I put together like my reactionary FYPD stuff, like literally that night of the draft and we were talking right. and stuff, I do my pitchers and hitters separate before I put together like a top 50, like overall. Mm. And I literally put Dolander as like number 22 on my pitchers. I normally do like 30, like a top 30, just because I was like reactionary. I was just like, he's a fastball, like rising fastball guy in Colorado. It's never mm-hmm. work. And right. then I was like, I kind of came to my sister like, yo, you can't do that. Like that's crazy reactionary. And I moved him up, but still like, I still had that spirit about me with him of just like, mm-hmm. technically I have you in the top 10, but like, I don't feel that right.
There's like, definitely some heartbreak there.
Yeah. Like it's going to be,
you know, like,
So yeah, so pitching wise, I don't know what, but Colorado, as far as hitters, like I said, I'm watching, I'm paying attention, just because again, like talent can be found in so many places that I feel, just completely writing off complete organizations now, the way things go, like we're seeing talent pop up in like the wildest stories, the wildest, like, oh, this guy, we, you know, left him for dead. He got traded 2-3 times. Like Carter Kieboom is back. Like what?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, now we got Carter Kieboom hitting home runs again. It's like, I haven't thought about this guy in like 3 years. So like, you just never really know. And like, is that sustained? Who knows? But I'm just saying like, you never truly know what will happen. So yeah. Anything else to add this week in baseball, Jake? I think those are the only two notes that we really had.
Yeah, I think those are the two biggest things that we wanted to talk about. But I mean, Amador, he's one of my favorite prospects. He's so good.
He's just
elite contact hitter.
That's what exactly.
Coors has some nice power, like
speed.
He's been great speed. Yeah,
a bit of speed. Playing in the middle infield, which you always, you know, you can never, in my opinion, I think that's the second position after pitchers, quite honestly, where there's always a premium to get better, better middle infielders, right? Second, obviously shortstop, you know, even more so, but like even as second baseman, if you can have a couple of second basemen that you can mix and match, especially if there's some different skill sets there, I think that can be super helpful for you. Real quick, let me actually ask you this. This is completely unprepared, and this probably should be like its own separate like pod cast or section, but how would you rank like necessity in a major, in a fantasy team? Like, however you want to go, like least necessary or like least sort of talent, or what am I trying to say? Most talent heavy position to like the most shallow, or vice versa. How would you?
Okay.
And you can mix. You can do like corner in, you know, corner infield if you don't
right.
want to be third and for like. I'll give you that discretion, but I'm curious now.
Like in dynasty, like overall.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Because I guess that in redraft, there's going to be some differences there.
Right. Because I know the, because like when you run the projection, the dollar value calculators for auction drafts, you have to set, like you have to rank your positional, the positional values. And I think this year, it was, oh man, see, now I'm blanking. It was shortstops were usually pretty high, and I did the most because outfielders were shallow this year, and second base is also shallow. Shortstops were like deep at the front, but then there was a huge fall off. And then third base has also been shallow the last couple of years too. So, but I think in dynasty, so you're talking like the most talent?
Yeah, I guess what I was thinking of is just going off of this conversation about like Colorado and thinking about, you know, their hitters and things of that nature. Just thinking about like, and thinking about Amador, it's like, I would love to have like my personal preference. If I could just like cherry pick, mm-hmm. I would love to have like really good pitching. I would love to have really like good middle infielders, top, like stacked throughout. So like, a good shortstop, a good second baseman, but also like thinking about dynasty and prospects as well added in. Mm-hmm. Like I would love to have a top flight second baseman and or top flight shortstop, or a couple of them in my farm as well. And yeah, like, and then converse that to, or compare that to outfield, where it's like, I don't have to go out, like I don't have to go out of my way to get the best outfielders. I can probably cobble together a pretty decent outfield off the, you know, off the free agent wire. I don't have to have the best outfield prospects, because I can probably find, like, even in the FYPD, and I know I'm kind of conflating a bunch of different things, but like even in the FYPD, whomever you might have, like, okay, Langford, Cruz, like all the top, I mean, four of the top five guys, kind of consensus guys, are all outfielders.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Well, if I'm picking at number 7 or 8, I don't feel like, oh, I should trade up or the, like, I'm fine getting whomever is the best available player around that spot. And then knowing that, hey, my outfield, whatever I need to kind of revamp in my farm, I can probably find value there in the second or third round, because outfield is just so, so large. So it's so much volume as far as talent. So I guess that's where I was kind of going with that. We'll sort that out. Like I said, that probably needs to be its own like podcast, you know, in of itself, or like a section of our pod. So we'll kind of hash out.
Yeah. I would say, like when I look at my dynasty rosters and I look at my prospects, you know, for deeper leagues, I usually, like, if I don't see enough shortstops, I get a little nervous. Mm-hmm. Because I think especially like in prospecting, when these players are really young, it's like on your high school baseball team, it's like the best player was always the shortstop, you know, or like little league or whatever. And I think that it, like, shortstops move off positions as they kind of get older, right? And so I think even in FYPDs, you want the shortstops, because they're the athletes, and then they might move off to the corner outfield spot or maybe second base or whatever, and like that's fine. But I think hitting on the shortstop guys, just the athletic guys, you know. But I think third base is actually kind of tricky, because it's not quite as like hit tool first as first base. Like first base is like, oh, I don't really need to worry about that. Like there's going to be some masher that comes up, you know, like it'll be fine. Like I'll be able to find like a Reese Hoskins or something like that at some point. But I think third base, they still need to be good defensively. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, more than a first baseman, it's the hot corner. Right. And I think it feels like there's always a hole in third base profiles. I don't know if I've just kind of like noticed that recently, or if there's just not like a fantastic crop of third baseman, but I feel like it's, you know, it's like, oh, it's a corner bat, and so you need to have a little bit more pop. It's likely mm-hmm. not going to steal much. And then I just feel like it's hard to find a complete offensive profile from a third baseman. I feel like if you get that in dynasty, that's a really nice asset to have, especially because even in redraft last two draft seasons now, it's been tough after the top tier of third baseman.
That's kind of what I'm hinting towards, I guess, in this hypothetical that I'm posing. Is like, that's a really good point of a third baseman. You know, you can have a slew of different third base types, and when you're looking at projecting them, it's like, well, this guy's a third baseman, but like he's really, they've also played him in outfield, and like he's probably better as a left fielder, or like even as a right fielder mm-hmm. because of his arm, but he doesn't have the footwork to stay at third base. So like defensively, he's a little ambiguous, but he hits well. Okay, that's great. Well, this guy's a third baseman now, but like he's so big, by the time he fills out, he's going to have to be a first baseman, because he's just not going to be, he's too large. He's not going to be able to move around, but he thumps. He can't, you know, contact rate maybe not be great, but he can get you close to 30 home runs. Okay, cool. So you're really like, he's a third baseman now, but I'm really having to value him as a first baseman. He's a third baseman now, I really have to value him as like a utility guy, or like as an outfielder. This guy's a third baseman, and he's like Webb Jim every night, but he's probably going to top out at like 15 home runs and like I almost have to value him like I value a second baseman, but he's a third baseman. It's so like, yeah. That's kind of what I was talking through. Is like, we know like shortstop is like you said, like always number one. Personally, I would say like pitching is probably going to be my number two in a deep dynasty, just because like I've now learned over these past two seasons of my team still being bad, but getting better. Like the value of just having a bare minimum competent pitching staff. Like my pitching staff over the last 2 years has not been like, oh, this is amazing. But just being able to cobble together enough can go a long way, especially in the deep dynasty of just
winning. Yeah.
And especially also this is deep dynasty and this is also talking about categories. So like I'm not talking about roto, even points necessarily, but like in head to head, because it does enough to just be like, hey, every week I could possibly be competitive in the pitching categories. And maybe I can steal one or two hitting categories and just like it wins that way. So for me, it's like, okay, shortstop is great. Pitching also good. Even though we have this boom of catching prospects, I never think of catchers like first. I actually have been rostering two catchers the last couple of years, even though it's not a two catcher league. And it's really just because like together, I get like one major league player. Like,
right.
This guy hits for power, but he can't do anything else.
Right.
And then this guy is like, he gets every day at bats because he's the primary catcher now and he's good enough. And so together, it's like I have a whole player.
Especially in like a daily league, you could mix and match him. You don't have to play him for four games out of a seven game week or whatever, right?
And then this outfielders, like I said before, like I'm always falling in love with outfield prospects. But then when I'm starting to look back and be like, why do I roster all these outfield prospects? I can always find these guys. I'm always going to find these guys. They're always there. There's always going to be some guy who can run for days and hit the ball, you know, a ton or whatever. And he's a center fielder now, but maybe he'll be a right fielder. Like I can always find these guys every year versus to what you're saying. Like I could probably be locking in more to be like, oh, this is a shortstop second baseman. And I kind of need to solidify my middle infielder because you can never find those guys on the wire. Again, in a deep dynasty, you can never find middle infielders on the wire that are any good. You can never seem to find them like in a trade that works out in your favor. Like you're always paying a premium for getting those guys. Nobody wants to give up because that position or positions seems like that can fall off a cliff so easily. Where it's like, oh, I had three middle infielders and I was decent, and I traded one, and then one got injured, and now like I'm completely screwed. So, anyways, we'll hash that out.
Sure. I think honestly, we could have a whole podcast just about pitching too, just like building a pitching staff in a dynasty league. Like I was been having a conversation with Lucas Berry, who we had on this podcast, kind of at the beginning of right before the start of the season. He's been awesome. Just talking to him about overall strategy and whatnot. And we've been talking about pitching and kind of like our preferences on like ages and like the aging curves. And when are we willing to, like when you sell a guy or like when do you buy in, and then just like how to construct how do you deal with pitching prospects, the whole it's like tin staff, like there's no such thing as a pitching prospect, and kind of like going the anti of that and where to look and all that. I think we could do a whole pod on that. It's just like you said, it's like you if you're in a head to head, you could just, you know, you can get a solid staff and do that way and kind of stream the hitters you also just pitching depth is so important, you know, because like all the injuries that we've seen this year and in general, it's just a gauntlet, you know. It's so honestly, I find it so much fun just dealing with pitching. So. Yeah.
All right. With that being said, let's head into break. We're running long already. Let's head into break. Let's come back. We're going to go through. We have a prospect a piece per level. So we're going to go through rookie league and DSL combined. Low A and high A, and talk through some guys that we think should be getting a little bit more shine, bring some value to you from the lower minors right after this.
This podcast is sponsored by Underdog. Want to make money making picks on MLB games? Then you have to try Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. In Underdog's Pick'em game, you just pick your favorite baseball players and predict whether they will go higher or lower on stats like strikeouts, hits, and more. Pick the 2 to 5 players, get all your picks right, and you can win up to 20 times your money in a single night. Be sure to sign up with the promo code PITCHERLIST and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100 so you have some bonus cash to start playing with. Again, that's UnderdogFantasy.com or Underdog Fantasy in the App Store. Sign up with promo code PITCHERLIST and get your first deposit doubled up to $100. Must be 18 or older, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, 21 or older in Massachusetts and Arizona, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. In New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY. In Tennessee, call 1-800-889-9789.
All right, and we are back. So we're going to start with the sort of combination of both complex leagues, Florida and Arizona, along with DSL, as our first starting point. Jake, I feel like I always go first. Jake, you want to go first with your person this time?
Sure. Yeah. So the guy, that I have here is in the Yankees organization, at the complex level. And his name is Emmanuel Tejada. Not Emmanuel, it's Emmanuel Tejada. He's 18 years old, and he is a middle infield prospect, kind of plays all over the infield right now. But what kind of stood out to me was the strikeout-to-walk numbers so far. 217 plate appearances this year. He has a 20.3% walk rate and a 20.3% strikeout rate. So nice, clean, even 1-to-1 strikeout to walk there. It's a little bit, I think usually when you're looking at like strikeout rates in the complex leagues, you'd like to see it maybe even sub 20%. But I think pairing that with like the crazy plate skills there, is always really nice to see. 154 WRC plus, has been one of the best hitters in the league. And I think he hit 5 home runs, but I think he has more power than that coming. He is a little bit shorter frame, but he has a nice looking leg kick that, keeps him on time and, quick hands, big swing. I think he could kind of shorten that down a little bit and just kind of get more compact and more consistent. Looks like he's super athletic, and I think that kind of shows in his swing, but he doesn't need to kind of be all over the place like he is now. I think if he just kind of like hones in his approach a little bit from the, like with his swing, he has a really good eye already. So I think he just kind of like keeps all of his, he's very, very aggressive in like his mechanics, right? He's a bit all over the place. So I think if he just kind of makes his swing a bit more compact, really drives through that leg kick and I think he can get some more power working. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of like footage on him, obviously being in the complex league, but the stuff I've seen from the side and some, contact skills has been solid so far. He also has stolen 24 bases in 30 attempts. And that's solid. He went 11 for 17 in the DSL. So he's getting better as he's running just as much, but, or even more. And then he's also getting better at not getting caught. So I like to see that as well. But yeah, I think that's my guy for complex. He's 18 years old. So hopefully we can see him at low A to start next season and go from there, but I like what I see so far. Nice and projectable.
Very good. Very good. And we were just talking about middle infielders, so that's perfect starter.
Right. Right. You like to see him kind of play around the infield, get the reps at shortstop, and just athletic,
Yeah. So my guy is an interesting one. So the San Francisco Giants have two-way players over the last couple of drafts. One was Reggie Crawford. He's a pitcher, first baseman from UConn, had gotten injured and then came back from the injury. And then their 2023 first round pick, and this is my selection for this pod, is Bryce Eldridge, who was a pitcher and hitter in high school. They actually converted him to playing right field, which is a position he said he had never played before, before getting drafted. And so I picked Eldridge because physically, I think there's something very interesting there without getting into the two-way stuff, first and foremost, just looking at him and valuing him as an outfielder right now. In right field, he obviously has the arm. He's starting to look more and more comfortable with like pretty much every inning, every ball that he's making a play on, being able to have decent routes. I don't think he'll ever be, you know, we're not necessarily talking about a Gold Glover, but I don't think he is going to be a disaster if they choose to keep him in the outfield. He's athletic enough. And again, his size, he's 6'7". So you're talking about a big guy taking some big strides, able to cover a lot of ground. Already has hit 5 home runs in the Arizona Complex League. Swing and miss is real as well, right? This is like a classic big power, but big swing and miss stuff. He has obviously a big zone. The swing is not long, though, which is something that I like. It's, when you look at him, when you look at Eldridge, look at Spencer Jones. Also, I was doing some more FYPD prep, so I was looking at George Workout of the White Sox, another guy who's a lefty, 6'7", or 6'7"-ish, big zone. Like, all these guys are going to have the same, they're bringing the same profile, all three of them, which is they have to learn how to control their strike zone because it's bigger than most. The top of the zone especially, because that's where they're probably going to get attacked the most, because it's going to, most umpires are going to give more leeway at the top of the zone against a tall guy than, you know, a average or shorter hitter. So they have to be able to control those fastballs that they're going to be seeing at the top of the zone there. Being disciplined and being able to hunt for their pitch. I'm going to bring that up with another prospect further on. But the power and the power potential, right, game and raw power, is all three of these guys, and Eldridge especially. I mean, this guy's swing is one, is naturally able to loft the ball. He's able to go pull side, but also being able to go with some power away. You're talking about a guy who could be a 30 home run hitter consistently as an outfielder. Now, that's all hitter stuff. He has not pitched as a professional yet. I saw some speculation as I was putting the outline together today. I saw a speculation online, nothing that I would feel like solidified on, but, you know, the possibility that he could pitch at fall instructs. So that's something to potentially look out for. Pitching wise, it seems like, he has pretty good fastball. One secondary pitch, I want to say it's a changeup, not a whole lot to the pitch mix. So I don't know, you know, I wouldn't salivate too much over him as a pitcher as is right now, but we'll see what happens if and when he does pitch either this season or perhaps into next season. But just as a hitter at this level, as young as he is, the power that he shows, if you're in on Spencer Jones, if you're in on a George Workout, I would say there's no reason not to be in. If you're in on a Reggie Crawford, because that's kind of Reggie Crawford's profile as a hitter as well. Like, if you're in on any of these guys, Eldridge is just as good as far as power potential as any of them. So, you know, you're talking about, I think he has for MLB.com a 70 grade power tool. So,
like, holy cow.
Yeah. So that's my guy, Bryce Eldridge, two-way player, outfield and pitcher, technically, for the Giants.
Okay. Love to hear that, man. Love to hear that about Eldridge. Definitely like one that, you know, during and around the draft, being like, okay, there's another two-way player for the Giants. Like, what are they doing here? And like, maybe too good to be true, you know, but I don't think he needs to necessarily be the two-way guy. I think that there's plenty there to look forward to in the offensive profile. And yeah, I think it's just going to be fun to watch him hit.
I think actually
that power potential, man, that's awesome.
I think actually, at least from what scouting reports were saying going into their individual draft classes, I think Crawford is probably the better pitcher and Eldridge is the better hitter. That's what it seems like early on. So we'll see. Okay. We'll see how that bears. Like I said, Crawford has been hurt and they kind of been playing him along kind of slowly. And then you have Eldridge. Obviously, he's brand new. just getting drafted this year. But yeah, it's interesting that they went back to back years grabbing guys like that. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out. Going into low A, I'm going to turn it back to you, Jake, because you have a name here that we were talking off mic on of like, hey, this guy like just popped up on, I think, most people's radar. So this is like perfect timing to highlight him. But surprise, surprise, it's an arm coming out of the Atlanta Braves system. But maybe not who you anticipate, or maybe it is. Depends on how ready you are. But go ahead, Jake. Who's your guy?
Yeah, my guy is... Oh man, I not 100% sure how to pronounce the first name. I probably should have looked that up. Do you happen to know, Lamar?
I'm just going off of kind of phonetics, and I would say it's Jean Carlos.
Jean Carlos, yeah. Okay, we could do with that. It's J-H-A-N, Carlos, Lara. It's Jean Carlos Lara. Right-handed pitcher for the Atlanta Braves. Overall on the year, like, you know, numbers look solid, but nothing like screams out at you. You know, it's 72 innings. 4 ERA, 1.29 whip, which doesn't matter a whole lot for prospecting pitchers. You know, we've talked about it before. ERA in the major leagues is hard enough to be predictive. There's no way it can be predictive in the minor leagues. But 31.4% strikeout rate, 12.5% walk rate, and a 3.48 xFIP. And so it's like, okay, it's strikeout weight kind of jumps out at you a little bit there. Walk rate's a little high, but I think that's also kind of a more common thing that at least I've been seeing in looking at pitchers in the minor leagues. A ton of the guys that we have seen be promoted to the majors, like, you know, Kevin Williams, even Tanner Bibee had issues with walks. Bobby Miller was actually, I think, better than most, but a lot of guys have had strikeout rates in the minors of 10% or more and been promoted and kind of figured it out. There's just you know, there's been a lot of, I think, other people talking about how, like, oh, in the minors, you might be working on something specific, like throwing a certain amount of pitches or trying to do something, right? Like, so walk rates are tough. I think that was my point there. Walk rates are kind of tough to you can't, I don't think you could look at a 10%+ walk rate anymore and be like, oh, no, that's not for me. But even with a 12% walk rate, that's almost a 20% came on his BB, so that's good. But what really has gotten him on people's radars, I think, is his performance recently, which is ridiculous, no matter how you slice it. There's no caveats necessary for what he's done recently. His last three starts, 17 innings pitched, no earned runs, 26 strikeouts to 4 walks. That's insane. Also has 8 hits, so that's what, 12 walks plus hits and 17 innings pitched. That's, I mean, what, like a 0.65 whip or something stupid like that. And then the strikeout minus walk is 44% strikeout and 6.8% walk rate.
So that's like
37% K minus BB. Yeah.
That'll do.
Yeah. That'll work. So I don't think he's going to be at low A very much longer.
After the last start, he got promoted, like literally the next day.
Wow, look at that.
I allowed this because he has not made his high A debut, so I allowed it under our rules.
Okay, that's fair. But is he still, you know, lower minors? We're talking about lower minors, yeah. But yeah, now he's at high A. Thank you for that, Lamar. I went and watched his most recent start at low A. And what I kind of come away from it with, that it's a really solid arsenal with like the pieces to be, I think, a good major league arsenal. But I think right now it's just very unpolished. You know, his velocity is great. He sits around 96. I think in the start that I watched, he touched to 98 a couple times. But he also kind of dropped down to like 94 a bit as well. And then the broadcaster on the broadcast said that he's hit 100 a couple times this year too. So that's a pretty huge range, I think, for fastball velocity, 94 to 100.
Can I interrupt just for a quick second?
Absolutely.
From what you could see, at least, and I know it's always hard to tell in one start watching a minor league broadcast, but when the fastball was dropping to 94, did that seem like an intention of changing speeds, or was that like later in the game, like fatigue wise, or I don't know if you even recall, or
Well, I think it was weird because I noticed it for the first time in like the second inning, and I was wondering if there was if it was a different pitch, but it didn't have the movement of like a cutter. I think would really be the only, or like a two seamer that might make sense. But and so it kind of like took me off. I was like, I was just seeing 96, you know, 97. I was like 90, even 95 is like all right. But I think it was weird that it kind of hit me that it dropped to 94. But then two batters later, it hit 98. And so I think it's like, and then late in the game, he was still, I think, sitting around 96. He didn't hit 98 as much. So I don't know. It's like, it's a good fastball. It doesn't have like a ton of run or ride like you might have seen like with like Wu or Miller and these guys. But like he placed it, he was really good in commanding it kind of all around the zone. And guys were fooled by it. It wasn't hit very hard. So yeah, I think it's kind of like, we'll have to see where the fastball kind of like ends up, you know, where it can sit consistently. But I have no doubt that it'll be at least like 95. It'll be an above average velocity fastball. I don't think it's going to sit 97, 98. It'll probably be like 95, 96. So yeah, fastball is solid. And then the slider looks like, I think, a potential plus secondary pitch. And I was really kind of struggling with getting the full arsenal on the broadcast because obviously you don't have the convenient Statcast to tell you exactly what these pitches are. You kind of have to go by like movement profiles and velocity. If the broadcast has velocity readings, I was very lucky that this low A broadcast had velocity readings.
And if they have a good camera angle, so it's not like,
yeah,
like, well, yeah,
it,
like
it was fantastic. Actually, the camera angle was great. It was like right behind, like right above the pitcher, kind of like looking directly at home plate, maybe just a little bit to the left. And that was I think it was Altoona was the Braves lower, low A.
He was it's Augusta.
Augusta. Okay. It starts with an A. Augusta. So if you ever want to go look at a low A player for the Braves, the Augusta broadcast is solid, but the audio was horrible. It sounded like a spaceman talking to you from Mars. It was just brutal.
Maybe it was. Maybe Atlanta is well ahead of the curve and they had
right. But yeah, but anyway, the slider looked really good and it was sitting 87, 88. Which is fantastic for a slider. It was really tight break, not a huge amount of like drop or a huge amount of sweep, but I think you're able to command those sliders better. And it's also just harder to hit. It's harder to hit an 88 mile per hour pitch that moves like a slider, even if it doesn't have huge break numbers. So yeah, he commanded the slider well, got a good amount of whiffs on it. Then he also has a changeup that sits in the high 80s too. Which would be, I think, will be interesting to see the kind of velocity separation that he can get. Because if he ends up sitting 94, 95, and he has an 88 mile per hour slider and an 88 mile per hour changeup, there's just not a lot there to keep guys like off balance and changing speeds, you know? It's, I think, really close. But if he's able to sit 97 and slider 87, changeup, maybe he adds another pitch or just works with it better with sequencing and whatnot. But I think that'll be interesting to see kind of like how the arsenal kind of shapes out and with the velocity to see if he's able to kind of keep guys guessing and everything just doesn't get too bunched together velocity wise. And then also I'm pretty sure there's a cutter. It was hard to tell, but like there was like a 92 mile per hour pitch that had some movement to it. I'm like, okay, I think that has to be a cutter. And the broadcast was saying it was a slider. I just don't think that he's throwing a 92 mile per hour slider or 93. It wasn't a fastball. It had a little bit. So I'm pretty sure he throws a cutter as well. So, and that's it's tough watching pitchers sometimes in the lower levels, because you kind of have to trust your own eye to get the arsenal, and you'll see something. It's like, oh, that was something I've not seen so far. It's like the fourth inning. But yeah, overall, I think, and that's kind of part of the process to hone in an arsenal too, is get more consistent with the movement profiles, the locations, what pitches you're going to feature, how you're going to use them, sequencing and whatnot. And so I think that he's going to have the opportunity to work on that a little bit more in high A, and especially once he gets to double A next year. But the raw stuff, the raw skills, he wasn't like all over the place. His command looked good, and he didn't like, he when he missed, it wasn't like a throwing it over the catcher's head down the backstop or spiking everything horribly. So, so yeah, I walked away thinking that I would love to watch him again in Double A next year and see how he can build off of the kind of the budding profile there.
Yeah, I think Laura, like you were pointing out, Jake, with this shutout streak that he has going is what kind of generated some recent interest. That's exactly how he popped up on my feed, looking at the Augusta Green Jackets profile, and they were highlighting what he's done recently. And then, like I said, seeing the announcement, he got promoted right after to High A. So as High A is starting to wind down its season, he probably will be able to get a couple of starts in September for us to keep an eye on. So that'll be interesting. And I would imagine, I know you mentioned Double A, but I would imagine, especially getting a feel, not knowing, but getting a feel for how Atlanta tends to handle his pitchers, probably a full season of High A is what he has in store, or at least, again, using this as a example, as a template, right? Most of next season will probably be High A. Maybe as we get into late summer, fall, if he's performing quite well, you might see that jump up. But I think that makes, you know, now a perfect time to, in the deep dynasties, right? There's 16 teamer pluses. If you have those back end roster spots, you're kind of churning, especially your rebuild teams or your teams that just missed the playoffs. You're kind of just playing out the string now, trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do for next year? You know, who can I get rid of? Who can I get ready to package maybe in an offseason deal? I think if you can generate a couple of spots at the end of your farm system or the end of your bench, if you don't have a farm proper, Millar is a perfectly good dart throw to take right now. Again, you can see how he does at High A to finish out the year. And then in the offseason, you know, you can kind of take it from there if you want to drop him again or hang on to him based on what you're seeing. I think the profile, you know, pitch mix piece is very interesting to see what they do with getting him to pare down or hone in on exactly what he is going to feature. Like you were saying, Jake, if he has a fastball and a cutter and potentially a slider and a changeup, the Atlanta philosophy seems to be with their pitchers over the recent couple years, like, we're going to identify your best 2 to 3 pitches, and that's what you're going to throw. Like, we're not going to do a whole lot of getting you to experiment with throwing this pitch, throwing this. Why don't we add this? It's like, no, whatever you got, we're going to optimize what you have, and that's what we're going with. And so it'll be interesting to see what they optimize with Laura and what they go forward with. So very interesting name, someone I should say that I'm interested to see how he finishes his season. So let me tell you a story. It's about a Dodgers prospect. Shocker. It's a catcher. Well, we know it can't be Will Smith. He's not a prospect. It can't be Keibert Ruiz. He's not with the Dodgers anymore. Must be Diego Cartea, excuse me. Can't be him because he's not in the lower minors. Yainer Fernandez. Nope, not him. Because he's not in low A anymore. It's, and I'm assuming this is pronunciation again, kind of going phonetically, Tyron Lorenzo. I think Lorenzo is somewhat known. I don't think he's a complete unknown. I think especially deep dynasty guys have been watching him going into last year, actually, at the complex leagues. But as you can tell, like, Dodgers have, of course, a lot of prospect depth, have a preternational amount of depth at the catching position. And so I think it's easy for somebody like Lorenzo to have gotten missed a little bit by, you know, people that aren't super, super plugged in to deep dynasty or to complex these guys. So he's switch hitting catcher. That's a nice little wrinkle. 19 years old at the complex league, showed, showed pretty well. 8 home runs, 11 doubles, 122 was the WRC plus, and that was in 41 games. Okay. This year, double the amount of games played so far. This number is a little skewed because it's up to date as of a couple of days ago. I'm pulling it from Fangraphs. But 82 games played, he now has 20 home runs, 19 doubles, 147 WRC+. So double the amount of games, double the amount of work. You're seeing everything positive showing up as far as offensive production. K rate has gone up a little bit, but walk rate has jumped about 4 points as well. So we like seeing that. Swing and strike rate has been almost cut in half. It's still relatively high, 14%. But coming off of where he was in complex league, where he was much more of a free swinger, which is not super surprising, given the nature of the complex league and pitching in the complex league, it's still nice to see that you're seeing some sort of discipline show up, some sort of plate discipline show up for him. I think moving forward, it seems like he's going to finish out the string at low A, which means next season is really a matter of, you know, him starting the season ideally and hopefully at high A and having a full run there. I think now is probably the time to invest because, again, with Dodgers behind him, him being a international guy, right, complex league guy, which means he's very young, which means he brings a certain set of value, especially in a lot of dynasty leagues who value youth and production from younger players. Like, if he's out and rosterable right now, now is probably the time to strike, because by the time the offseason comes, he's one of those guys that when the re-ranking, you know, the re-rankings come, everybody, you know, edits their top 100, top 200, top whatever prospect list.
Right.
He's going to be the guy that's going to make some major moves where people are going to say, oh, we had him way down here. And he was moved, you know, I'm talking about a major move or 20 spots or so. I can see him moving from where he may have started on a certain ranking to where he's going to end up at the end of this season or going into the start of 2024. Guys that move like that don't stay on the wire for long. They don't stay undervalued for long. So Tyron, I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it. Apologies if it's not. LaRonza, strike now. Grab him if you can. If you already have him, good job. Hang on to him because the value is going to show up. And then it's going to be a matter, like I said, going into next season of what you want to do with him. But the value is definitely going to be there. You can probably make some sweet deals adding him to a package in the offseason to get some nice things coming back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the switch hitting catcher for the Dodgers. You know, like that's just, it's fantastic before you even tell me anything else, you know. But yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to look more into him to see where he's at in my leagues because I could use some catching depth in places, you know.
There you go. With that being said, we're going to take another quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to finish up at high A. We got a name of peace. To go through at the higher level. So we'll knock that out right after this break.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today. Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's NOOM.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right, and we are back. So I'll go first this time to finish up with High A. And my person, and this is another one that may not be super unknown, I think, given his output, and he's moved two levels already. I think most in Dynasty should know, but I'm still going to put him on a list, and that's Abimelech. We've been having some great names. I just noticed that.
Absolutely.
Great names.
Yeah.
Abimelech Ortiz, Texas Rangers. They have him listed as an outfielder. That's where I want to kind of pull up first and foremost. He probably will not be an outfielder at the major league level. I see him very similarly to Rowdy Tellez of like, could he play outfield? I don't think he's terrible. But like, is that his ideal position, especially with his body type? No. Like, he's probably going to be a DH first baseman type. Just because he's a thick boy. He's probably going to continue to add, some pounds to him as he ages, whether, muscle or otherwise. And I can just see, you just kind of forecast that slowing him down, and him not being as valuable in the outfield. But technically speaking, he is labeled as outfield right now. That is where he has been playing a significant number of games for the Rangers. Moved from low A to high A, overall has 30 home runs on the season, major power. Another person that has major strikeout concerns, 29% K rate, 49.6% swing rate. So almost 50% of the time he's swinging at something, and a 14.8% swing strike rate at high A. Those are his at high A numbers. So yeah, lefty. So you like to see the lefty slugger, as a corner bat type, right? That's an archetype that we know and love. The pull side power is tremendous on this guy. I know I was talking up Eldridge and some of those guys, but what Ortiz does, if you watch any of his home run videos, he punishes mistakes. Anything that's left hanging, anything that's middle of the zone or in this, anywhere close, he's sending it a long way. And what he can do going the other way, I know, again, I was kind of saying similar things to Eldridge, but seeing this at a higher level, right, against higher competition, what Ortiz can do going center or going to, essentially left center, equally as powerful. But my question there becomes, he handles mistakes. Can he learn some more discipline and be able to hunt for his pitch? I don't foresee him ever not having swing and miss stuff. The swinging strikes probably going to remain pretty high. K rate, we would like to see come down from 29%, but it's probably going to be in that, at best 26-27%. And he's probably going to be a frequent swinger. Maybe that can come down a couple of ticks, but, it's probably not going to ever be 42%, swinging strike rate or something like that. But if he is going to strike out, if he is going to be swinging, pretty frequently, I would like to see it in a profile that's him trying to hunt for pitches that he knows he's going to be able to do damage at, not just swinging and missing at everything. So can that be done? And can that be done as he goes up another level to double A? If it can, I think the Rangers are going to continue to have really a scary offense, right? You think about him, you think about Wyatt Langford, and you think about, what they already have on the major league level. Josh Young, having a healthy return, like all that sort of stuff. The future is bright as far as Texas offense is concerned. Ortiz probably is taken in all leagues, except the most shallow of leagues. I am kind of highlighting them, but I think, at the higher level, there's not a whole lot of unknowns, even though you have a name here I've never seen before. So that'll be interesting to talk about. But most high A guys, especially for hitters, deep dynasty and even sort of mid tier, right? The 14, 15 team dynasties know about these guys. But I just wanted to highlight, like, Ortiz, I think, will be very interesting. Like I said, I talked about Rowdy Tellez, really fill in the blank of a lefty slugging corner outfield bat over the last 10 years. And Ortiz is right kind of in that same sort of wheelhouse. It's just a matter of that sort of his end game. Can he reach it? Because the floor for him is a guy that just never makes enough contact to maximize that power against more advanced pitching, right? He's doing this against high A now. And I want to say, I should have pulled up his age. I want to say he's 22. Could be wrong about that. Could actually be younger, but I want to say he's 22. But, you know, as he goes against more advanced pitching, seeing less of those mistake fastballs, can he make those adjustments? Because if he can, he's probably never going to see a major league level at all. But if he can, he can bring some real thump. So, Abimelech Ortiz.
All right. Yeah, sounds great. I mean, like you were saying, man, that Rangers offense, if they can keep producing some guys, that's wild. But yeah, love the power potential there. My guy's also more of a power bat than like an average or a speed bat. And you haven't heard of him, Lamar, because he's old. He is old for the level. He's 24 I know, 24 in high A, and he was drafted in the 10th round, 290 overall in 2021 out of college.
Okay, so he's an old college bat.
Yeah. Okay, so he's only been in the organization for 3 seasons, you know. So he's not exactly just been, you know.
And what organization is he in?
Colorado Rockies.
Yay! Full circle. Full circle. Love it.
Yep. And hey, man, hey, you know, you never know. This next crop of hitters could work out. They could have a great offense in 2 years, you know? Yeah. You never know. So the thing that really caught my eye with this guy, oh, his name, by the way, his name is Zach Kokoska. And he's a first base outfield type. Doesn't offer any speed. No, he does. Sorry, wrong guy. I was looking at someone else that doesn't offer any speed, but he does. Kokoska does offer some speed. He stole 17 bases last year and 18 this year. He's 18 of 25 this year, so the percentage isn't great, but still like to see it from someone with good pop. He has 16 homers this year and 322 plate appearances, slugging 562 with a 259 isolated slugging. The speed is a nice little bonus. I think if anything, if he were to get to the major league level, I think it might be like a 10, you know, 10 steal number. And I think that he could be a 20 to 25 guy in, you know, long-term homers, 20 to 25 homers long-term. But what caught my eye with him is what he changed from last year to this year. So last year in low A, 23-year-old, 358 plate appearances, and a 197 isolated slugging, hit 249, 101 WRC plus, 13 homers. And it's just kind of like that would never have caught anyone's eye, you know? But a big issue for him that he had last year was his, you know, his launch angle. He had a 43.5% ground ball rate, which isn't horrible, but a 40% fly ball rate and a 16% line drive rate. You know, the high fly ball rate will likely come down as he gets closer to the majors. Not very common to run that high of fly ball rates consistently. But what he did was he took 10 percentage points off the ground ball rate and added them to his line drive rate. So he's at 27% line drive right now, 33% ground ball, 39.6 fly ball. Mm. And so I don't think this 27% line drive is sustainable quite either, you know, but if he could be average to above average at hitting line drives and keep just knocking down that ground ball rate for a power first guy with average to above average speed, you know, you don't want to just like hit balls into the ground. And his home run to fly ball ratio this year in high A is 20%. And so he doesn't even necessarily need to hit 40% fly balls to get a good, you know, home run, to get some good home run output. And so that was kind of the biggest thing I was looking at, was he had a really kind of underwhelming season last year, but still had some solid power numbers and a little bit of speed. And then this year, he's been hitting more line drives, been hitting way more doubles. He hit, I think, 14 doubles last year and 21 this year, which is huge for his slugging percentage and overall output. And his also he's a solid plate approach too. He's been about a 0.5 BBK for each of the three seasons. He had a 6.3% walk rate to a 12% strikeout rate in the complex league. Then it was 9.5 to 20, and now it's 10.9 to 23 in high A. So, you know, I think that it's possible the strikeout rate, you know, kind of continues going up. He gets exposed to double A and we never hear about him again. That's absolutely possible here. But I would love to see him at double A at Hartford and maybe even go catch a game out there since I'm much closer to Hartford now. And yeah, so I think that's kind of my biggest thing for him was like he made some sort of change in the offseason and he's a college bat. Mm-hmm. And I think that he could play, you know, in Colorado. I think there'll be opportunities for him. I think, I mean, it's mile high, so you get a little bit of a boost there. But I like the profile. I like that he's making changes. And I think just realistically, even with the age to level being like, maybe he is kind of taking advantage of some less polished pitching right now. Even if you look at kind of the timeline for when he could get to the majors, it might be a little concerning too, because you know, if he gets promoted to double A this year, that helps a little bit. But let's say he finishes the year at high A, starts maybe next year at double A. He's probably not making his major league debut next year in that case. And then you're looking at 2025 when he's going to be his age 26 season, which isn't bad, especially for a college bat, you know? But it's just kind of like you're looking at the upside here. And I don't see him as like a huge upside bat, but I see him as someone who could come up, get a solid share of playing time. And he's kind of like a Nolan Jones profile. I don't know if he hits the ball as hard as Nolan Jones, but that's kind of, I think, where I'm looking at is kind of the optimal outcome here. Mm-hmm. And he's not, like you said, Lamar, like he's not super well known right now. Again, people usually pay attention to a 24-year-old at high A. But I think that there's some boom in the bat that I think could be impactful. It's just kind of like how is he going to adjust to double A and triple A when he's more age appropriate?
Yeah. A couple of things that you said that really stuck out. First and foremost, you mentioned he had a 101 WRC plus last year, right?
Yeah.
At low A.
Mm-hmm.
And he had, and what was his slugging?
Last year, 447. Yeah.
447, and he had ISO of 197.
And this year it's a 259 ISO, 562 slug, and 156 WRC plus.
So something that I want listeners to be aware of is, because I've seen these discussions and I'm pretty sure, I'm like 90% sure this is accurate, so I feel comfortable enough to say it, that the WRC plus numbers that we typically see and use, especially for minor leagues, are not like park adjusted. And the California League is the second best hitters league to the PCL. So he was in the California League putting up very good numbers, like that's really good slugging, pretty good ISO, like really good, not pretty good, really good. And he was only slightly above league average.
Yeah.
Because there's no park adjustment for California League. So when you look at those WRC plus numbers, and I know we use them as well without necessarily putting that context in, but sometimes you want to keep that context in mind of like, what league were they in that they're doing this? Like,
yeah, what's going on? Fantastic point.
So that jumped out to me. And then I went and I went back and looked at his college career, right? Because we say he was older college back. What was he doing in college? Well, he's a 4-year college player. And one of those years was COVID.
Oh, yeah.
So now we have some better context around why is he so much older in a high A. His freshman year, he was 19. So he's already older. He's an older player. His freshman year, he's 19. He's not 18 or even 17, right? So he's an older guy just in general. So you can't really hold that against him. It's not a performance piece or a talent piece. It's just when he was born. Nothing you can do about it. When he was born and when he started school. Nothing you can do about that. Played 14 games as a freshman at Virginia Tech, as a true freshman. Next year, he played 53 games. he transferred to Kansas State. Then 2020 hits. They only play 17 games. And he comes back to finish out what is being pegged as his, according to this site, as his junior year, I guess because of eligibility with what they did with the pandemic year in 2021. That ended up being his draft eligible year. Played 57 games. And then that's when you see the explosion, right? Because these first few years, I mean, the 14 games, you know, it was 14 games, 15 at-bats. So, like, he wasn't even starting. His sophomore year, 53 games, he hit 8 home runs, 7 doubles, stole 8 bases. So you kind of see it burgeoning there, but nothing great. COVID year, 17 games, wiped that off the map. So then his draft eligible years, 57 games. He hits 15 home runs, 19 doubles, 9 stolen bases. Does get caught stealing 5 times. So again, those attempts, successful attempts to overall attempts is a little, you know, a little wonky, but that's where kind of seeing some of the talent that we're talking about here. And then he gets into what you're talking about with his professional career as in the minor leagues. So now all of a sudden I am interested in this guy. Now all of a sudden I am. And based on what we just talked about with the Rockies, if it is the old way, this is a guy who's going to be, you know, he's in high A now, finishes in high A. Next year, maybe he even starts in high A before getting moved to double A. Then he languishes in double A for a while, and then they finally move him to, like, that's the old way. The newer way is he finishes in high A. They immediately put him in double A to start next season. And right. If he's showing anything as far as, you know, a repeat of these last two seasons in the minors, he's in the major league team somewhere, because Blackman is pretty much like his career is coming to a close. They yeah. still have some outfield spots to fill. Toglia has not really worked out for him. That's another bat, by the way, that is kind of in that older regime of like, right. we were waiting for Michael Toglia for forever and ever, he didn't really work out for them. So like, there's a potential to see, like, he's almost the perfect test case for how the Rockies want to go, because of everything that's going on here, all this different context and different data here. So it can go kind of either way. So yeah, now I am more interested in Zach Kokoska. So thank you. This is perfect. This is, I couldn't ask for this. One last thing that I want to look at with Kokoska, and I'm trying to pull it up real time. I got stuck looking at his college stats. And I want to look at one other thing, which you kind of alluded to, which is, you know, what is his actual performance versus, you know, level. And so longtime listeners should know that he was also a two-way player for a hot second. Nah, not really. It looks like this is just mock duty. I'm just looking at his baseball reference page, and like he has like a couple of innings logged at Kansas State, and like inning logged in the summer league. So this must have just been mop up duty from a few years ago. But longtime listeners should know that I love going to Baseball Reference and looking at the breakdown of performance against older hitters versus younger hitters, especially when it comes to a player like this, where like kind of older for the level. What has he actually been doing? Batting splits. So against younger hitters, okay. 10 of his home runs, is batting 301, 412 OBP, 552 slugging, 964 OPS. So feasting on younger pitchers, not a super surprise. 50 games and 100 plate appearances against older pitchers, 6 home runs, 5 doubles, 308 batting average, 370 OBP, 582 slugging, okay. Good for 952 OPS. So it's not just beating the young kids, right? He's And if we take a look now, some of this, again, using Baseball Reference, so it's not all the different tidbits that we like to see breaking down, but just looking month by month, it does look like his overall season was buoyed by an extremely hot May, where he hit the majority of his home runs. He hit 9 home runs in the month of May. He hasn't hit more than 3 in any of the other months that they have logged, but they don't have August on here, which I don't know why. But yeah, his May was super hot. 9 home runs, 391, 482, 794 is what he put up in May.
Holy cow.
So yeah, a lot of the stat stuffing was done there. But if you look at everything else, I mean, April looked pretty good. June, it took a bit of a dip there. Came back in July. And like I said, I don't know why reference doesn't have his August numbers in there. I guess I can look elsewhere. But yeah, I mean, this is... I'm intrigued. There's just enough there for me to have some questions, yeah, right?
Yeah, and I just found this this piece that was done by a local news station. It looks like in Kansas where he played, and he tried to change his swing last year to be more efficient and compact, short to the ball. You know, all the stuff that we like to talk about. He tried to change his swing last year, and it looked like his timing was just like off. His hips were kind of disconnected from his hands, and it was just like not working for him. This year, he went back to his more college swing. College approach is a little longer, and it looks like he looks so much better. Like they had some film of him like last year versus this year, and he looks way more like just like on time with the ball and fluid. And it's a little longer, sure, but I think that that looks like to be the change that was made to kind of facilitate this. And honestly, like if it's working for him, like he might have to make some tweaks, you know, if he gets to upper levels, and maybe if he get, you know, it's the tweaks to get to the high fastball or whatever it may be, right? But I think if anything, it's made him more helps with the confidence and just kind of comfort there. So that's probably the biggest change that was made there. And honestly, it's kind of like figuring out what works for you, right? Like in the minor leagues. So the adjustments are being made. And I think that like you said, like I love that he's hitting the older pitchers great, even, you know, even better than just beating up on kind of the wild guys down there. So yeah, no, I think, thank you for backing up my, giving some more context even here, making me sound great, but, yeah, no, I can't wait for the promotion. I'll see how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. Well, with that being said, that's the show that we have, kind of quick and easy. Same old as we were winding the season down as far as articles that you're getting from us. I do know that the Dynasty team, overall at Pitcher List should be, putting together a nice compilation of prospect lists. We have Matt Heckman leading that effort and getting us all together. So I'm sure you'll hear and see more about that as we get into September. So you'll be seeing some entries from myself. Jake, I don't know. Are you writing in this as well? Okay, so Jake,
yeah, myself,
I know Matt himself will be writing in some of our other Dynasty writers that we have. So we'll talk more about that as, like I said, the calendar turns to the month of September. Watch list is coming. We'll be winding that out down probably mid-September. I think you can probably anticipate the last watch list. So we got a couple of weeks, like three or so weeks left for the watch list to be coming. Jake, what about for pitchers to stash? Do you have an end date plan for that?
So actually for the pitchers to staff, I've actually kind of started the process of passing it off to Matt, who's going to take it for a week or two. And then one of our new Dynasty writers is going to take it for the rest of the year. And that will, I know that'll be finished up in, I think, mid September. So I think there's maybe 3 or 4 more of those left, but I had to actually kind of to take myself off of that one. Cause it was my full-time job is taking a lot of my time right now. And it just got to be, I think, too much. I was getting a little burnt out by it. So yeah, now I'm more focused on this podcast. I'm going to write that article for you mentioned the overall kind of prospects to watch. We're going by divisions, and so I'll take it. I can't remember which division I have. I think it's like NL East maybe. But I'll start working on that too. But for now, minor league pitchers aren't quite my expertise. I guess I still know about them, but not where I'm focusing now. I'm focusing more on the podcast and then just kind of like recovering in my free time from all the stress that the full-time job's taken. So yeah, honestly, I think that it's in great hands then going forward too.
All right. So yeah, we'll have more, like I said, talking about the effort that we have from Dynasty team with our prospects. Other than that, last bit, we are hoping to have a special episode that we will bring to you to kind of end the official minor league season. Doesn't necessarily end the, or it might actually be the end to the OTF season as well, but something to do with our previous guests that we've had this season. So hoping to get that together and bring that to you in the month of September as well. So September should be bringing some good stuff. Fall weather, fall clothes, hopefully some lower temperatures, maybe depending on where you live, and some good prospect dynasty stuff to finish us out. With that being said, as always, want to remind listeners that you can find this podcast and all of our Pitcher List pods on the Pitcher List Network podcast page. They're all available in the podcast section of Pitcher List for you to find, listen, and subscribe. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at Inside Fastball, capital I, capital F.
And you can find me at Jake Maish, M-A-I-S-H.
You can also follow the podcast on what is the proper Twitter page?
At PL on the farm.
There you go. With that being said, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.